For the third straight night, fire raged unchecked in the ghettos of Miami. And the death toll continued to climb today as once again lawmen struggled against rioters to restore order in a major American city.
This is a CBS News special report. The violence in Miami. From New York, here is Dan Rather.
Good evening. An ugly, unwanted creature of our recent past has returned, full grown, to haunt us in this new decade, the urban riot. By one count, at least 16 are dead, more than 370 injured, many seriously, and property damage may be in the billions of dollars, following 2 days of shooting and beating, arson and looting in the city of Miami. In terms of fatalities, the new violence in two sections of Miami is this nation's worst outbreak of urban disorder in a single city since the riots in Detroit and Newark in the so-called long, hot summer of 1967. Tonight, there were more incidents in Miami. Bruce Hall is there.
As of 8 o'clock, we have a curfew. You must be off the streets. Please go into your homes and off of the streets.
Despite police pleas, a number of people remained on the streets tonight after the curfew went into effect. Then a short time later, a number of fires began breaking out all over the city. Firemen refused to fight most of them, saying it was not safe. At least one person was killed when Miami police shot a black man at a roadblock today. That means at least 16 people have been killed and more than 460 injured in the past 2.5 days. Miami black leaders say tonight they are concerned because things do not appear to be cooling down very quickly.
My current analysis of the situation is that it's not cooling off as rapidly as we'd hoped it would. I think we still have quite a potential for more violence.
What is it going to take to get the situation cooled down?
I really wish I knew. If I could answer that question, I think I would feel much, much more at ease. I don't know what it's going to take, but I do feel that with the Attorney General taking the time to leave Washington and come here personally to announce that an investigation is going to be forthcoming. I understand I do not have all of the facts on it, but I understand the government, the state government, is also going to lodge an investigation. I think these are the kind of things that are going to begin to ease the tension of those persons who, to this point, feel that justice just does not work for the blacks.
However, former United Nations Ambassador Andy Young, who spent the day talking with blacks on the street, says he thinks the worst is over.
Well, I think there's a great deal of frustration. People, however, I think, have run out of steam, and I hope and pray that the violence in the main is over. And I think that the thing I'm worried about now is that you've got a National Guard that's been up 3 nights and out in the sun, and they're going to be jumpy.
The president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Dr. Joseph Lowry, tonight tried to transfer part of the blame for the riot to President Carter.
President Carter needs to come to Miami. I think the crisis in America is in Miami, not in Afghanistan. And I think we need to stop worrying so much about boycotting the Olympics and boycott the Klan and boycott racism and boycott economic exploitation in Miami and in Georgia and New York and all over this country.
There's a black community in Miami that has been ignored, not only by the White House and not only by the state capitol, but by a lot of the national black organizations too.
It was after midday before all of the fires set Sunday night finally burned themselves out. When officials were able to get into the riot-torn area, they found destruction everywhere. In block after block, businesses were burned and destroyed. It appeared the rioters concentrated on the large markets, warehouses, factories, and liquor stores. Many of the small family-owned operations were left alone. Officials said the damage will reach into the billions, and it will take years to rebuild the predominantly black areas. Dozens of businesses in downtown Miami closed early today. Some owners boarded their entrances or put up metal hurricane shelters to protect their merchandise from another looting spell. 3,600 National Guardsmen were stationed at intersections throughout the predominantly black northwest section of Miami. They were given orders to enforce the 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew and to prevent looting. Some of the guardsmen were stationed in front of stores that had already been broken into. More than 460 people have been arrested, most for looting of supermarkets, pawn shops, and liquor stores. Some were arrested for curfew violations. The curfew extends over a 50-square-mile area, including most of downtown, Coconut Grove, and a predominantly black northwest section of Liberty City. Peace. Governor Bob Graham went on television tonight, pleading for a night of peace.
I urge you to share my concerns for all the people of this community, to exercise restraint, to obey curfews, and request and orders of authorized law enforcement personnel. We desperately need a night of brotherhood before we can begin to build a future of peace in Miami.
The night has not been entirely peaceful, but it has been much quieter than the past two nights. Bruce Hall, CBS News, Miami.
By the way, Bruce himself was roughed up this afternoon when he was out covering the story, but we're pleased to say that he's all right now. Underscoring the gravity of the racial violence in Miami, President Carter sent the U.S. Attorney General, Benjamin Civiletti, to that smoking city in person today. The president's marching orders to the nation's chief law officer, restore order, and make sure that justice is done. Toward those ends, U.S. officials said they'd go before a federal grand jury on Wednesday to see if the four ex-Miami policemen acquitted in the Arthur McDuffie killing might be reindicted. From Miami, CBS News law correspondent Fred Graham explains.
It is not at all unprecedented for the Justice Department to consider prosecuting the four former policemen on federal civil rights charges, even though they were acquitted of murder in state court. This would not be double jeopardy because different levels of government and different charges are involved. What is unusual is for Attorney General Benjamin Civiletti to launch the Justice Department's investigation in a dramatic appearance designed to cool the anger of the black community over the acquittals. He was asked if this didn't threaten the fairness of the investigation of the four former policemen, and his answer reflected the conflicts involved.
There's a very strong perception of injustice, and I use that term because I don't know the facts, and I don't think I can prejudge anyone's rights of any citizen until I have the facts, until we have the facts, and they're presented in accordance with due process to a federal grand jury.
Perhaps surprisingly, a defense lawyer for one of the policemen agreed that the Justice Department's decision would be unaffected by the emotions here. But he called it inherently unfair to try the policeman again.
The government can break any defendant if they just keep trying him often enough. Is two enough times? How about six? Surely you'll get one out of 10. No defendant can stand up to that. It's not fair. It's not proper. Government gets one bite of the apple. And they had more than a fair bite.
Civiletti made it clear that he will not rush the grand jury investigation so that the decision on whether to indict the policemen and try them again will not be made for some time. Hopefully, when passions have cooled here and peace has returned. Fred Graham, CBS News, Miami.
Side by side with that federal inquiry, Florida Governor Bob Graham now has ordered his chief counsel and a 7-member panel of citizen advisors to look into the handling of the McDuffie killing case. The governor calls this proceeding a search for justice. With me now are three CBS newsmen who've been on the scene in Miami, correspondents Bruce Hall and Ed Rabel and Steve Croft, who was a TV newsman in Miami before coming to CBS News recently as a reporter. First of all, Ed Rabel, is it your impression that the worst is now over in Miami, or is the worst yet to come, or can you tell?
It's difficult to tell at this point, but I believe that the violence has abated somewhat. But we have to remember there are now more than 3,500 National Guardsmen employed here, and roadblocks are set up over the entire northwest section of the city where most of the violence has occurred, and most of it has been in the predominantly black neighborhoods. So while there seems to be the appearance that the violence and the rioting is abating, there are those who say that this could go on for some days, and that they had hoped that it would get down or slow down a lot faster than it has, but it just simply has not done that.
Bruce Hall, what concrete steps do you hear people in the black community talking about need to be taken now to simmer the situation down?
Several things need to be taken now. They need to be able to find jobs. And with the tremendous destruction that you had in the black community, with a number of the homes and a number of the businesses being destroyed, this is going to be a very difficult time from an economic standpoint. So first off, we've got to be able to have jobs for the blacks. We've got to be able to have help for them to recover, because they've had so much that they have lost. They were at the low point on the economic pole in Miami anyway. And with the tremendous destruction that you've had in the area, it is going to be extremely difficult for them to pull themselves out of this hole.
Steve Croft, with your experience in Miami, what have you been able to pick up about the effect, if any, of the influx of Cuban and Haitian refugees? Has that had any bearing on this situation whatsoever?
Very definitely, Dan. It's one of the sore points in the black community. The influx of Latins, a half a million in the last 10 or 15 years, has really affected the blacks' ability to get jobs. A lot of minority positions have gone to Cubans. The tens of thousands of Haitians that have come into the country during the last year have been turned away at the same time that the United States has opened up its arms to refugees from Cuba, from Cambodia, from Indochina, and the blacks see this rejection of the Haitians as another form of racism.
Ed Rabel, your experience in the South and in and around Miami goes back quite a ways. Do you hear blacks saying in Miami, things have changed since 1968, the last time Miami had a national headline grabbing racial disturbance, or that things have not changed?
On the contrary, Dan, I believe that blacks here have been telling me that the situation that they had hoped for, an amelioration of the racism which they talk about here, just simply has not occurred, and that they, since 1968, have not been able to amass much political and economic power. As a matter of fact, since 1968, it seems as if, as Steve has told us, the Cuban community has really stepped up its ability to gain political and economic leverage. And this has placed the blacks really in third place on the economic rung. So they really are feeling the pinch now. And of course, a whole series of events in the courtroom has really caused the blacks here to feel that this McDuffie case, which we've been talking about, is just the final blow.
Bruce Hall, we keep hearing reports, and I want to check them out with you because I know you have been in some of the neighborhoods, of a special kind of, and that's the way it's put, a special kind of viciousness. Random shots, just shots right out the window into the night taking place, and a new element of viciousness. Is that hyperbole or is it fact?
Well, there's something you're beginning to see, particularly you're having a lot of instances with sniper cases and the bottles that are being thrown. These are not ones that are being thrown from kids in the streets. These are being thrown, many of them by adults, standing behind windows. They're not ones that people that come out where you can see them and visualize them. And it is an instance with the snipers, which is the most dangerous thing that we have going now, and it is the thing that have kept the firemen out of the area, because we've had sniper attacks virtually every time the firemen have gone in to fight fires. And last night, we had over 200 fires.
Steve Croft, some black leaders of national stature, Andrew Young, Reverend Jesse Jackson, to name only two, have been in Miami, I'm told. Are the blacks listening to them?
It's kind of hard to tell. They're turning out and they're hearing. Whether or not they're listening, it's a little bit, I think, too early to tell. And Andrew Young said tonight that there's very little that black leaders can do to stop violence once it erupts in the ghetto. The best they can do is to try and translate that rage into some kind of productive action and change, and it's going to take a day or two more to find out whether they can actually stop the violence.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Our appreciation and admiration for your coverage there. Through a quirk of coincidence, the awful eruption of man-made violence in Miami is occurring at just the same time as the awesome eruption of a volcano in Washington State. And like that volcano, Miami has only appeared to be lying dormant over these past few years. There have been continual rumblings of racial tension, the worst outbreak 12 years ago during the Republican National Convention. Then, three blacks were killed in gun battles with police, the battles taking place in the black neighborhood called Liberty City. That is where the battles are occurring now. Ed Rabel takes a look back, starting with the story of the man whose death was the cinder that ignited this latest explosion.
Arthur McDuffie, age 33, former United States Marine, Miami businessman. Investigators said white Dade County policemen last December 17th chased him down, beat him brutally, and made the motorcycle he had been riding appear to be wrecked accidentally. The police said they stopped him for a series of traffic violations and that McDuffie suffered his injuries when he resisted arrest. Only necessary force was used, the police said. He died without regaining consciousness. McDuffie's name became a watchword for Miami blacks who looked to the trial of the policeman in Tampa for justice. Last Saturday, the verdict came in.
Not guilty. So say we all. David H. Fisher, foreman.
Alex Marrero, Michael Watts, Ira Diggs, and Herbert Evans had been acquitted by an all-white jury of all charges ranging from second-degree murder to complicity in a cover-up. McDuffie's mother was in the courtroom when the verdict came in. McDuffie's name, once a watchword, had now become a battle cry for Miami blacks. The McDuffie case had been described as a time bomb, but it was only the latest in a chain of events triggering the black outrage. For example, an all-white Miami jury had convicted nationally recognized county school superintendent Johnny Jones, a hero to blacks. The charge, using school funds to buy luxury plumbing for his vacation home. Another case, Nathaniel LaFleur, a black Miami school teacher, was beaten by police drug raiders who had the wrong address. No policeman was charged. And then there was the white policeman Larry Shockley. A grand jury recommended that he be fired, but not charged after he shot to death an unarmed black man.
We think that the state attorney's office has been operating on a double standard of justice. We've seen some things happen to our black leadership that has really taken us down a few pegs, and it seems that they've gone out of their way in persecuting with the more vigorous persecution of blacks who have possibly a leadership role in the community than there have been of whites. I think this is one of the underlying main causes of the blow up this weekend of this community. And I think that is the best way to destroy your people. When they lose, when they feel that they have no rights in the courts, this is totally frustrating. And this is where hopelessness sets in. And this is why I feel we have this sort of violent reaction. When you feel that if you can't get a fair shake out of the courts of your country, where can you go?
Still, at an emergency meeting of the Community Relations Board, black leaders looked for a way to stop the destruction. Mrs. Eula Bell McDuffie went on TV to plea for an end to the riot.
I asked these people and beg them with tears in my eyes to quit this, and look to God. That's who they need to look to.
Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Andrew Young, came to town to call for nonviolence as he had done so many times before in the South. But many in the audience refused to listen. In spite of efforts by black and white leaders alike to defuse the outburst, it continued almost unabated. And as it spread toward poor white communities on the fringe of the black district, residents sympathetic with blacks and their outrage armed themselves.
Have you been threatened?
Yeah, they said they'd be back.
And you're willing to defend your property?
That's right. I've got my kids back there, and nobody's coming through for my kids.
I see you're carrying a shotgun here.
I've got a little boy. I'm going to protect him. I'm going to protect my property. I never did anything to them people. They don't have no right coming in here and doing something to me.
The terrible thing about it is we sympathize with them. We feel that what was done in Tampa 2 days ago was absolutely a travesty of justice.
Still, such white support, blacks said, has been sporadic at best. The black community has sometimes felt itself almost literally forgotten.
Black people in this community today feel that we are a non-entity. We feel that we are a non-people entity. You know what that means? If you're not a human being, then you're an animal.
The 250,000 Miami area blacks have never been able to amass much political and economic power. They blamed white leaders for paying more attention to another minority, the Cubans. They said the Cubans pushed them out of their neighborhoods, created a little Havana there, and took traditionally black jobs in the hotels and service industries.
People have a sense that
in their own community. They are being displaced in jobs and elsewhere by the Hispanic community. I'm not sure that perception is always valid, but people feel that way and they act on those kinds of feelings.
The burning and killing, Black said, is the deplorable result of years of what they call injustice. The acquittal of the four white ex-policemen in the beating death of McDuffie, they said, proves what they have contended all along, that justice in Florida is marked whites only.
The only response to this desperate situation was to kill anybody who was white, and people did that.
What is the answer? How will the Black community ever be at ease again with itself and with the others who live here?
I don't want to sound hopeless, but I'm not sure what the answer is unless there is some intervention by the U.S. Department of Justice in this case and in other cases like it. Unless we change our juror selection process, unless the deteriorating economic conditions in this country are addressed by the political candidates and political parties, and I don't think they're going to address those issues in these times, the danger exists. America has lulled itself into believing that the potentiality for racial outbursts and violence was passed with the 1960s. It has not passed. It simply happened here first. This country continues to be a powder keg because all of the conditions that were in existence in the 1960s when we had the great riots of that era now exist, except that they are worse.
After America's nightmare summer of racial violence in 1967, a special presidential commission on civil disorders was appointed. Its report did not mince words. Quote, "Our nation is moving toward two societies, one black, one white, separate and unequal. Discrimination and segregation have long permeated much of American life. They now threaten the future of every American. This deepening racial division is not inevitable. The movement apart can be reversed. Choice is still possible. Our principal task is to define that choice and press for a national resolution. To pursue our present course of all involved with the continuing polarization of the American community and ultimately the destruction of basic democratic values. To repeat that for emphasis, what is involved is the polarization of the American community and the threat to the destruction of democratic values." The commission report went on to say, "The alternative is not blind repression or capitulation to lawlessness. It is the realization of common opportunities for all within a single society." Unquote, the President's Special Commission on Civil Disorders 12 years ago. Perhaps no reasonable person would argue that nothing has changed since then, but a reasonable person might well ask, has enough changed since then? For CBS News, Dan Rather in New York, thank you for joining us. Good night.